At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Hello, hello, everybody. How's it going? Welcome back to another episode of the Knife Talk podcast, where we talk knives. Pretty straightforward. It's in the title there. We answer questions. We give each other a hard time. We work through tough dilemmas. And sometimes we do an occasional pop quiz. But we are here. I am Marco Malmasi of Malmasi Fire Arts. I'm here with Jeff Fader of Fader Knives and the captain of the ship, Mr. Craig Lockwood. And Mr. Craig Lockwood, would you like to kick it off this week? How has the last week been?
It feels as if I'm in this perpetual cycle of trying to get this house finished before the baby comes out. Nobody needs to know my bad news. We just had setback after setback. And on top of that, the kids have been off school with another COVID incident in school, so they just have to close. And they decided to come home on their last day bringing fucking head lice with them. So yes. We'll be dealing with that as well. It's like, So, yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
You got all the creepy crawlies.
Look at you. The panties working out for you then.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, it's just this mad rush against time. And my wife is so big. She's the same. Basically, when they do a scan, they can sort of measure how big they think the baby's going to be. So the baby at the moment is just under 6 pounds, which is heavier than the twins when they were born, you know, at birth date. And we've still got, 6 weeks to go? So it's going to be a whopper. It's going to be a whopper. And, it could come at any time now. So it's just a race against time in this house to get everything ready. And we're having people not turning up and, you know, tradesmen not turning up or, you know, doing the wrong stuff. And it's just frustrating, to be honest with you. But it's fine. Even if we had to, you know, move in tomorrow, we'd be okay. But it's just not as we want it to be, that's all.
So the baby's due any day now?
The baby is due, I think, 10th of March, around then. But she's the fact that she's so big, they're saying it could come any time now, really. You know, so yeah, it's all good.
Look at you. All good.
Stress. Head, to say the least, honestly. It's just crazy. But, you know, nothing's bad. I can't complain. Sure. It's just a lot happening, and that's all.
Head lice.
Oh.
Sorry. How are you handling the head lice? The head lice was a problem when my kid was very young, and I threatened to shave my head, and my daughter was very upset when I even suggested it. Are you having...
I'm one of those people, even the thought of, like, people mentioning spiders or lice or anything, I just get itchy immediately, you know. Even now, I'm just like, oh, shit. We're handling it. We're on the third application of all the shit they need to, you know, put in their hair and all the rest of it. And because they're so young, they can't have, you know, the normal stuff, so it's all... Ugh, it's just a fuss, you know, a big fuss. And, you know, bedding having to be washed every day and all that kind of stuff, and... You know, we're in a rental house at the moment still until we get into this house that I'm currently recording in. So it's just one of those things. It's fine. It's all first world problems. You know, there's people in far worse states than me.
Well,
so
I'm, they have I'm, lice. I'm all good. They have lice in the third world too, you know, developing
they
countries.
Do, well, yes, countries, I'm sure they do. Sure they do.
Oh, yeah. I hated lice.
Hated it.
Craig, do you
so
have
what's been going
any,
on in the world?
Do you have any? Do Sorry. You guys have names lined up for the new baby?
We do. We
do. Keeping it a secret?
I mean, the twins know. Whenever we're on the phone to a member of our family, they're saying to the girls, "So what's the new baby's name?" And Amy's quite adamant. She wants it to be some sort of surprise for the family, you know. So
big announcement.
So if we already know it's going to be a boy.
So if we guess it right now, will you say yes or no?
I will.
Oh, you will.
I'm pretty sure you wouldn't guess.
Can you give us three guesses each?
This isn't fucking Wordle. This is my first boy.
That's right,
my son and heir.
This is Wordle. I'm going to give you a word, and then you're going to say the green A. The right letters are green. The wrong letters are gray.
Okay.
Yellow letters are the wrong
let's
spot.
Let's do that.
Come on, Mareko. You first.
I don't know how Wordle works. So I just
shoot out a name. What do you think the name is?
Well, funnily enough, it's a 5-letter word as well.
Dante.
So we could actually Wordle the shit out of his name.
Dante
Lockwood. I'm not mad about that. I'm not mad about Dante
That's
Lockwood.
One. It's strong.
That's a good
okay,
one.
Okay, you have no letters, yellow or green. So ooh, wow. Mareko, let me set the scene.
Okay.
Wordle is this, it's this game that's appeared online where it's not an app, it's just done by the browser. And it's 5 letters. It's a 5-letter word, and you have 6 guesses to guess this word.
Okay.
So you type 5 letters in. If you get any of the letters right, you get a yellow square. So you know
no.
you've got that.
Yes.
Oh, it's a logic.
Yes. In so the right, but in the right, but not in the right space.
Right.
Exactly. So you know you've got that letter's in the word if it's yellow. If it's green, you know it's in the word and it's in the right place too.
Okay.
So Dante has no, it's all gray. None of them are right.
Gray.
None of the right letters.
Really? D-A-N-T-E. Nothing.
There's none.
Okay.
Wow. That really, I'm already stumped. I'm already stumped. I can't, funny enough, Mareko, when we were, my wife likes Wordle because I said, I said exactly what you said before the show started. I don't do games because I don't need any more apps. And I'm the same way. I don't put any goddamn games in my, I said to her, I need to spend less time online. I don't need to spend more time online.
Yeah.
And then she said to me, it wards off dementia. And I was just like, what's the website? So give me the website. And the funniest part was she had me do it. I got it. I think I got it in 2 or 3. I decided, because I know Craig does Wordle, that you can share it and it shows a little box. I'm sure you've seen it. It's quite obnoxious. I sent it to Craig with underneath it, eat my ass.
Oh, okay.
Under the thing. And I said to my wife, I said, I'm sending this to Craig and I'm writing eat my ass under it. And she's like, what's the matter with you? Why can't she just be normal? And I said, I obviously can't. Can't.
So, Mareko, the magic of Wordle is it only updates every 24 hours. So you can only do one. There's no time limit, but you can only do one. So you can even come back to it later in the day. You give it lots and lots of thought. It's not just a quick, you know, it's quick as you can type game. You can only do one. But the weird thing is that everybody else in the world has that same word. So you know that everybody else is trying to work it out. There's no competition. There's no time. There's no points. This is like etiquette that nobody... when you get the word, you don't share the word. Yeah. You spoil it for everybody. It's like the complete opposite to the rest of the world, where everything is as fast and get as much as you can. This is just, we're going to give you one word a day, that's it.
But it doesn't mean that you're smart or not smart if you don't get it.
It does.
No,
it does,
doesn't.
Jeff.
It does not. It does not. I've done it 4 days in a row, and I do actually like it. And for the rest of the show, we're going to stop talking about the name. You guys talk. I'm going to get a pen, because at the end of the show, I'm going to figure out the name of the upcoming child of Craig Lockwood, okay? Let me go get a pen. Mareko, tell us about your week.
My week has been pretty straightforward. It was actually a lot like last week. Did a bit of forging. I'm working on a random Damascus blade this week. And the order... But I get kind of bored with random Damascus, and I don't know how familiar you are with it, Craig, but it's literally just a random patterning. So it's straight layers through the cross section of the material, and then you disrupt it to kind of mix it up and stir it up and create some interesting patterning. And so
there's no symmetry or geometry involved. It's just completely random. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. And so sometimes it has like a wood grain appearance or a watered kind of appearance. And so I usually just start with straight layers, but I decided to do a gradient billet. So I basically, it starts kind of darker on one side, and then it gets lighter to the other side. So it gradiates through the billet, and then those layers stack up. And so what will happen as I forge through and create that disruption in the material, it'll have this additional sense of kind of depth to it, as well as having the random patterning. So I've been working on texturing that and beating that basic in the process. Sorry, let me step back. Is at a certain point, like, and the layers are all straight, and then you just kind of beat the shit out of it. Some people like cut away material by drilling holes or grinding in lines and stuff like that. And the other way is to force like texture into the surface of the material. And so I was using like ball peens and cross peens and hammers and just beating the shit out of it. And then you grind it clean. And then what you get are partial cross sections when you grind it all flat again of the various activity that you've created. So now the next steps is to get back in there and finish forging that blade out after it's all cleaned up. And it should be pretty, and probably will still leave it somewhat textured and rough. I don't want it to be really clean because, again, I want to kind of disrupt those layers as much as possible. So that's going good. I'm getting ready for to be on the road for a bit. Wednesday evening this week, I will be flying out to South Carolina. And I'll be there for a few days through Sunday. And then I head down to Atlanta for another, what is it? I think it's like 6 or 7 days. And then I'll be back in Washington. Nice. I'll get back just in time for Valentine's Day.
So what's happening in Carolina to begin with then?
In South Carolina, there is an event called Winter Strong. There's a company named Sornex that creates, they build like heavy duty exercise workout equipment and like racks and stuff for barbells and bench presses and squats and all that kind of stuff. And so they do kind of a private event every year. And Jason Knight was actually at last year's, and he'll be at this event as well. And there'll be a few other people there. Mr. Josh Smith, Neil Kamimura, Kyla Cummings, Joe Maynard, just to name a few. But people basically go hang out, do like outdoorsy bushcrafting, hunting kind of stuff, as well as some like weight training, and there's kind of people from the fitness industry there helping to, because basically it kind of started from all these people who are athletic and want to learn how to hunt, and all these hunters who want to be more athletic so they can go on these deep hunts where they're hiking out into the woods and miles and being able to haul back, you know, the animals they harvest. And so, so that should be fun. And then in Atlanta, I'm working with Neil. We're going to go teach a friend some knife making stuff and just kind of hang out a bit.
Great.
Should be good.
Yeah. Sounds fun. Sounds fun.
That sounds great. I know that, Josh and I, are you going to be demoing at the Winter Strong event, or?
It's nothing too official, but I will be there doing a lot of forging, basically like day in, day out, forging, meeting and hanging out. It'll be a kind of like a small version of a hammer-in, because there's only going to be like 4 or 5 smiths there. But it'll be good. It'll be fun.
A hammerette.
Yeah. Come on. I like that.
That's going to be great. That's going to be a lot of fun. You don't have to bring all your tools with you and stuff, do you?
Well, because I'm going to be going straight down to Georgia and doing some teaching down there, I am going to be actually bringing some tools. So I'll have my Hilltop Forge hammer and some tongs and some basic. No, I won't be. I have some sanding, like hand sanding equipment and stuff, like some of the stuff, because that's going to be some of the stuff. I'm going to be teaching some Damascus finishing down in Atlanta. And so, yeah.
That'd be great. A little change of pace.
Yeah. Sorry, cool. Somebody ask a question?
No. Oh. Sorry, there's a bit of a delay. Sorry. Okay. No, I just said it sounds like a great trip. It sounds like you're going to have fun.
Yeah, I think so.
Nice. Jeff, apart from watching your friend Jacques Pépin on TV last night, and then I can imagine you thinking, he's going to use one of my knives. It's like, fuck, he's only doing eggs. You get it. I can imagine you. Well, went, oh, shit, it's just an egg.
I got a nice message from his daughter saying that they made a mistake. They wanted me to... It doesn't really matter. There was a lot of things that they wanted to do, and they didn't do it. But it was great. I mean, look, you know, be honest with you. So Jimmy Fallon is a giant late night person in the United States.
Yeah.
And having Jacques Pepin on, he's in his late 80s. He's like them kind of like really respecting who he is and having him. And he had a good time, and he was making omelets is really cool. So, yeah, that was really neat to see. Mm. And actually, my whole week was derailed by you, Craig, first thing Monday morning. It was really obnoxious. And it's knife-making related, ladies and germs, so be surprised. Jeez. It was Monday or Tuesday. Wow. You sent me, I feel like it was Monday, but it might have been Tuesday. So you sent me this message, and you said, how do you store the arms for your grinders? Hmm. And I looked over at my table as soon as I saw the message, and they're like arms everywhere. I mean, like literally, their arms, any flat surface, there's an arm. There's a wheel here, and then there's this, that. And it's all over the place. So all of a sudden, you were trying to figure out how to do it. And I was thinking, well, if I were to make something, what would I do? And I was just like, well, I'm certainly going to try to do something quickly. So I went and got a couple 2x3s, and then I just made this rack that's a little bit, two parallel 2x3s. That are a little bit bigger than the outside. So if my arms are, you know, 1¼ inches, I made them like 1⅜ inches, 1½ inches. And then I mounted them underneath in the middle of my desk or my work table. And it worked great. And it was like, I was glad I did it. But the whole time I'm cursing you because all of a sudden I had to go back to the hardware store because they didn't have this screw. And I had to go back to the hardware store because one of my plugs was broken and I had to change the plug out. And I was just like, God damn, that Craig Lockwood has totally derailed my whole day because, you know, I prepare for the day. Like I don't like to off-road it at all. And if I off-road it, I always end up in some sort of weird
mood. I asked you one simple question and that derailed you.
You fucking derailed me. Yeah, you certainly did. But at the same time, I was glad I did because now I have this very organized system for my grinding arms, and it's out of the way, and I'm not tripping over them, and I have all this nice table space that I can destroy with something else. So
it was a neat approach. It was good.
It was great because it was really like not crazy. It wasn't like a ton of work, and it was like 3 2x4s and a couple pieces of scrap wood and some screws, and it was like great. So, and then I posted about it, and then a few people were just like, "How did you do that? What did you do?" So I kind of did a little bit of a very quick video on, not a video, but like stories on how I did it. It wasn't a big deal, but it was, but I cursed you the whole time, even though you made me do something that I should have done. But that was that. And then I got some work done. I'm working on a new set for a high school friend who, got a big set coming up. So I'm working on that. And then, I sent something out to a good friend of ours and, you know, hauling ass, doing a lot of podcasting, a lot of interviews and stuff like that. And what was interesting was, kind of off the topic, is I was on my way home one day and I get Blade magazine. I don't know if you guys get Blade magazine. It's great. You know what? Support them. Usually you'll see some people we know. You'll see friends or people we admire. You'll see a lot of knife makers, which is great. A lot more culinary people are in Blade magazine more and more and more. And this week, actually, one of our listeners, Dennis Terrell, is in there in the back. Dennis Terrell's, he did a Bowie challenge on YouTube and he won, and he's in the back page, a great picture of his work. Yeah. So I was looking at the cover and there was on the cover, it says one of the articles is things not to ask knife makers. So I thought, ooh, Blade magazine's getting spicy. Maybe we're going to have some spice because in my mind, I'm thinking, you know, good. Be a little bit spicy. Hmm. So they had an article all about the things, if you're not a knife maker, to ask knife makers. And I thought, all right, let's hear it. So one of the things that you're not supposed to ask. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you what they wrote. Things that they wrote. And then we're going to do a list of more things that you should not ask a knife maker. Because you'd be surprised at how tame this is, and obviously we'll see. So the first one was, apparently you're not supposed to ask a knife maker. And I'm assuming that this is asking a knife maker if you're at an event and you see knife makers. You go up to a guy's table, and these are the things, this is the non-good etiquette things to say to a knife maker. Number one is, how long did it take? So asking a maker how long it takes is, that's no go to see Maru. That's a very gauche thing to say. And then another one is, apparently, as far as this, these guys go, it's how did you make it, apparently, is something you're not supposed to ask a knife maker.
Oh, can you show me how to make that? Yeah.
How did you make it? That's the question. Okay. Apparently, that's what you're not supposed to say. And then another one is, what knife do you carry? Seems like a pretty benign question, if you ask me. Apparently, that's avant. It's not nice.
How can I trust you as a knife maker if you carry a piece of shit knife?
I mean,
that's what they're really asking.
It says one of the most interesting questions from a custom knife maker might revolve around the knife the carrier carries. You may be going out on a limb, putting the maker on the spot, or even offending him if you want to know what's in his pocket. Ask at your own risk. So that's that. And then I guess asking if the price is negotiable is big time bad. So don't ask if the price is negotiable. They lose their minds. And honestly, that's really it. I mean, that was the question.
That's pretty tame, yeah.
I figured, I was reading it and I was like, when's the spicy shit coming up? Like, when's this? So I was thinking maybe we could kind of go up and have a real, I mean, if Blade Magazine doesn't listen to this, Blade Magazine should do a piece on this podcast, by the way, because we are the number one knife-related podcast on this German-infested planet, period, end of sentence. But if they wanted to ask a question about what you shouldn't ask a knife maker, what are some of the things that you wouldn't want to be asked if you buy a customer?
By a customer.
Ooh. Or a potential customer, or a tire kicker, or a window shopper. What would it annoy you?
What did those materials cost? Right. What do the materials cost?
Sure. Oh, that's bad. Yeah, don't ask about the cost of the materials. That's bad. What do you think, Mareko?
One of my favorites, or least favorites, I would get asked at a show is, why is that chef's knife so expensive?
That's that should have been in the
stupidest fucking question ever.
That should have been one of the questions that they put in the article. See, that's better than all three of those questions.
Yeah.
Why does this cost so much? Is a great thing that you should definitely not ask.
Yeah.
Terrible.
You either like it and you buy it, or you don't like it and you don't buy it, or you like it and you can't afford it and you move on.
It makes me think that because people do say that, and it's almost as if you're putting someone on trial, and in your mind, you think that this person is strong mentally and emotionally enough to be able to answer a logical question and ruling out any kind of emotional damage that it might cost, you know? Yeah, that's a fucking good one. Craig, spout out some more questions. What should you not ask a knife maker?
I'm thinking.
Is it sharp?
I know. That's a mighty fine finish. What abrasives do you use on that?
Combat Abrasives makes the world's best abrasive belts for knife makers. Available in any size at unbelievable prices. Go take a look at combatabrasives.com and get 15% off with promo code KNIFETALK15. Do it now.
There we go. Canucks, I haven't forgotten about you. Canucks, Canucks, whatever you call yourselves, I don't know. Canadians from Canada, if you are looking for combat abrasives, we have a reseller in Canada now who's doing a deal. If you buy 10 belts, you get 10% off too. If you're in Canada and you're looking for belts, maritimeknifesupply.com is the place to go. They also sell Rhino Wet, which, as we all know, is the best stuff for hand sanding. And it's like the one-stop shop for knife makers. If you're in Canada, that's the place to go. Maritimeknifesupply.com. Get your combat abrasives from them too. Did I answer that question?
You did, but I think there's a few more we can do. Mareko, do you have any other questions? It's more along the lines of, what should you not say to a knife maker? And let me just say a couple, just to get them out of the way. One would be, have you been on Forge and Fire? That would be something that you should not say to a knife maker. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but these guys have heard it enough. Even people who've been on it, you know, who've been on it. And the other thing is, you should not say to someone, you hold someone's knife or you look in someone's knife, I love that, but can you do it in a different handle? That would be something I wouldn't say to a knife maker at a, I love this exactly, but can you change the handle? That would be something I wouldn't say to a custom knife maker to blade at a blade event.
Yeah. Or I get quite a bit when people, you know, people who are not sort of in the industry see my knives, they say, did you forge that yourself? And like, for me, who don't do forging, it's all stock removal. There's no sort of good answer to that, really. I just got to say, no, I don't. And, you know, it's like, ah.
How about, can you make a knife like this and show someone a picture of somebody else's knife? I got that recently. I get that all the time. And it's like, a guy wants a custom knife. He knows what he's getting and he knows what I do. And then he shows me somebody, not even somebody we know's knife, somebody like something that he uses. Can you make a knife like this? You shouldn't say that to a knife maker.
Or, my son would love to get into knife making. Could he come and work with you? I've had that a few times.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, oh. But you know what? If you are looking for work as a knife maker, we know somebody who needs help, actually, don't we, Jeff?
Oh, yes. Tomer Botner is putting out the bat signal. So if you're in the EU and you want to join one of the best joints around, he's taking people on. And here's the best part. He's going to, you know, and I know what you're saying. You're saying, well, I'm going to send a message to Knife Talk. Don't send a message to Knife Talk. Let me send a message to Florentine Kitchen Knives. Don't send that too. He has in his bio, you have to do a LinkedIn. So he's going to be sifting through some of you rabble by using a LinkedIn method to apply for the job. But if you wanted to be...
They're all listening going, what the hell is LinkedIn?
There you go. Well, that's how he does it. That's how he... I was talking to him earlier this week and we were talking about it. I was like, listen, we'll get you somebody. But he's like, we put it in the LinkedIn. I'm like, all right, that's how you sift out some of the rabble. So if you want to... I mean, this is a great opportunity to grow with a great company. Like, he wants someone who's not just a knife maker, but someone who wants to be involved. And, you know, it's a great opportunity, especially if you're a young guy. I don't think you need a ton of experience, but experience definitely helps. But if you go to Florentine Kitchen Knives, go to their bio and find out. Yeah, you know, fuck it. Send them a DM. But serious people only, I would for sure say. But definitely,
and then moving to a new spot too, aren't they?
Big spot, yeah. They got a big spot going on, and we were talking. He wants to get an even heat because we're going to be, when I get back there, we're going to do some classes again. And he's, they're bigger and better things with Florentine. But I think that if you're a young knife maker in the EU and you want to like really kind of get a leg up, this is the place to go.
Oh yeah, for sure. And remember to put Knife Talk 10 in your application so we get 10% of your wages. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Okay. Do you have any more things that you would not say to a knife maker at an event that you can think of? Or we, you know what we could do is we can put this out to the audience. If you're listening in this podcast and you want to reach out, we can do it in the listener feedback. What are some questions or what are some things that you shouldn't say to a knife maker at a knife event? How's that sound, guys? Good?
Yeah, cool. All good. Shall we do some questions then?
We got lots of stuff today.
We've had a bunch in, yeah. I'll start the first one. I think it's Elian Durant, I think. My brother's considering going into the military. Well, first of all, thank him for his service.
Well, potential
and possibly
service.
Special forces.
Potential service. Don't thank him. Listen, I'm totally for the military. I'm saluting the military. If you serve in the military, I appreciate and thank you for your service, but if you haven't and you're thinking about it, can't thank you yet. Got to get in there, okay?
That is such an American thing, you know, thank you for your service.
Well, you thanked him for service. He hasn't even done anything. He's thinking about it.
I wouldn't say I was mocking him because I think that would be quite rude, but I was just making the point that's what you Americans say.
I know, but like you thanked him for his brother's considering to serve. That's not.
Yes.
Can you do that?
I'm confused.
Exactly. I don't get it. I just hear you Americans say it. I don't know what it means.
Craig,
I don't.
You thanked him for nothing.
Craig, do you guys
thanked
not
him for
serve
nothing
or thank your service members?
Not. It's
Craig
not really a thing.
It.
It's not really a thing that no. Yeah.
Interesting. No.
That's why you're.
I wouldn't say. Not that I'm not grateful, but it's not something that we say in you know when we greet people and that kind of thing. It's
well, you. But you thank this dude who hasn't even done anything yet.
Oh, I'm trying to fit in with you guys. I'm the odd one out here. Jesus Christ.
I love
something
it.
Nice.
I love
that. Fuck him. Fuck the army. Fuck the military. Fuck you all. Okay? I'm trying to do a nice thing here. Anyway, back to... was it Elian Durantes and his beautiful brother who's joining the military and possibly the special forces? If I had to make him a knife to go to war with, what steel should it be? Stainless, of course, would be a bigger blade, 6 to 8 inches cut in length, and something that can kill a tank. A shorter version of the question could be, what steel do I send my brother to war with? Fuck, that's deep.
Well, Alien, thank you for your brother's potential service. I certainly appreciate. I'm saluting you and his thoughts of service.
I'm standing erect here. Is it right? You know what I mean.
That's the real tank killer. Yeah, that's the real tank killer. 3-inch, the 3-inch daisy cutter.
Oh, jeez. This poor guy. He's trying to do nice for his country.
He's thinking, so about, he's thinking about his country.
What steel do I send my brother to war with, is what Issa backed out.
Well, here's what I would say. I made a knife for a Black Hawk helicopter pilot, and there were certain things that you couldn't do. And I would definitely... Oh, he's there. I think he's back in there. I have no idea. There's certain things you can and certain things you can't do. So just whatever you do, you should probably figure out the requirements that they allow. You can't just go bring like your great grandfather's like sword to war. You should probably, and I would think that if you were to make a knife or to for someone about who's thinking about serving, you probably don't want to give him something crazy so people make fun of him.
Yeah, I'm amazed that people can, like, join the military and take their own weapons.
Well, I don't think you can. I mean, I think that when you get into it, I think that there are certain things, rules and regulations. I don't know, except for when I made this knife for this Black Hawk helicopter pilot that turned into our Bull Elk knife. He said it's got to be a certain length and size, and he's like, I really don't want to deal with carbon steel because of, you know, the use and everything like that. So there were some rules and regulations that obviously... Wherever you're going, you should probably want to find out. But I would think you probably, you would probably want to not be. I don't think you want to show your individuality like too much when you go and do it, because you might want to just do what they tell you to do. That's what I would suggest.
Yeah, yeah. Strange on that. Do you want to take the next one, Jeff?
Tradition. Sure. Company. This one comes from Tradition Company. For someone making kitchen knives, there is a lot of terminology for the exact style of knife. Most of us just make something that we think looks cool and not a Santuco-inspired design, for example. How do you know how to accurately identify yours when selling it? So maybe you don't know the correct terminology, maybe the different shape and stuff like that. How do you identify and describe the knife that you're making?
Yeah, I mean, I know very little about, you know, traditional patterns of knives, that kind of thing. But there is a great book, Knife. It's called Knife.
Oh, yeah.
And it's by Tim...
Hayward.
Google it quickly. That's it, Tim Hayward. It's a really good book, and it gives lots of examples of different styles and patterns of knife. But it's just semantics, really, to me, isn't it? You know, I'd probably say that what I do is like a traditional sort of Western style. You know, the subtle differences between a German and a French pattern, for example, all these kinds of things. But yeah, that's a really good book, Knife by Tim Hayward. It's got lots of images as well of great knives, reasonings for certain shapes. Yeah, that would answer the question far more better than I ever could. He literally wrote the book on the subject.
Yeah, so, yeah. It's a great book.
Jeff, I mean, how would you consider yours? I mean, if somebody say, you know, what style of knife do you make? What's your?
I'll tell you what's interesting is I've really gone out of my way to be very sensitive to and not flippant about what I make. So I tend to stay away from a lot of like names that I don't really connect with culturally or understand. So, like, I'm far more interested in trying to figure out a way to describe them and use the vernacular that I'm familiar with. So, like, a lot of these Japanese names, I really can't, like, I can't pronounce. I don't really know what they are. I can't identify with them. So it's very hard for me to just make the decision to use them. So I understand that a Santoku it's a little bit more broken, but rounded at the tip, and maybe there's a little bit more rock, and I understand about Gyotos and all that stuff. But I tend to not use them just because I would rather just keep everything simple. So what I do is I do use K-tip, and I think it's been a great method of kind of describing the knife and having that subtle break.
That's quite descriptive as well, isn't it?
Kinda. I mean, I think it's kind of slang for that Japanese version, and I've actually really kind of liked it. I try to be descriptive, Eastern style and Western style. I try to, you know, I just try to be honest, and I try to break things down as simply as possible.
Mm. Yeah, makes sense. Makes sense. Yeah, but yeah, get that book. Honestly, it's a good book anyway. Knife by Tim Hayward. Now, it's available on Amazon and other shitty bookstores, I'm sure.
Do you? While we're at it, do you want to? I have listener feedback from last week. If you want to hear it.
Yeah, let's do one. Only if it's good feedback.
Yeah, no, it's great feedback because it's timely. This is about I'm trying to keep things as timely as possible, including I have a timely blacksmithing thing, but we'll hit that later. Okay. But as far as listener feedback, Rodney Philman writes, "That was such a great episode with Dr. Laren. I listened to it 2 days in a row. Just like the book, you can give it a casual listen." And then his favorite quote was when we were talking about our terrible language, I think I was making some joke. He says, "My parents taught me right," and he likes that. There's that. And then he wrote, "That's the best dry ass one liner in the business."
Was it intentional?
Was it intentional for Laren or for
you, your dry line?
No, it was his dry line. His says, he said to us, my parents taught me right. You know, I don't use that kind of language. My parents taught me right. And it was like, ooh, and it was this thick, speaking of thick disses, Dan Ackman says in the last episode at 1 hour, 11 minutes and 7 seconds on the Dr. Thomas podcast, there was a pause and possibly a fart. I can't be the only one to hear it. Can I? Is that right? And then he says, "I just listened to it again. It's certainly a fart, and I'm hysterically laughing alone in my truck." So 1 hour, 11 minutes and 7 seconds. I went back before this episode aired or we started recording. It's not a fart. It's like, it's a noise. I think it's a noise coming out of Dr. Laren's mouth. I think it's okay. like a kind of like a gurgling groan, but it is not a fart, even though I wish it was. I really wish it was. Oh, I just
no
got
more doctors on the show. Yeah.
You know what? It's funny. I was listening to the David Chang podcast, and he has on Dr. Henry Louis Gates. And he says, "I don't like to be called doctor because I'm a PhD. And they said, "Why is that?" And he says, "Well, if I'm on an airplane and someone like needs some sort of medical help
on the plane, yeah,
I'd rather be professor. I don't want to be like, you're a doctor and do something." He's like, "I don't want to be in that position." So maybe, you know, that was that. I just got a message from Rec. He's going to have to sit the rest of this out. His connection's
wiped. Okay.
Wiped out.
Okay. Well, while you're talking about the David Chang podcast, you told me to listen to it because he had this whole bit about pizza ovens.
Yeah.
I completely disagree, you see. Completely disagree. So if you haven't heard it, I'm just trying to bring it up now. What's it called?
David Chang Show. You like how Mareko leaves and now we've totally stopped talking about knives? I mean, it's like talking about farts and now we're going into pizza?
No, pizza.
That's an outrage.
Yeah.
We can't. Blade Magazine is never going to have us on if we don't get back into knife making.
We'll get back to knife making in a second.
Okay.
This episode is called The Pizza Oven Paradox. Right. And the whole basis of this is that what he's saying is that people who own a stone pizza oven, an outdoor oven, they regret it. They never ever use them. And you sent that to me saying, "I completely agree with him," and all that kind of thing. I disagree. And I think I gave you my reason.
Let's just let's set it up. So they were talking about making pizza at home, and they were talking about these little pizza ovens, not these big pizza ovens. It was almost like they were pointing it out as like a gadget. And he made the point that it's too much work to actually use it often. And that they're just kind of, you know, it's almost like having a juicer. If you're not, you use the juicer for 5 minutes and then you think, I'm going to be making fresh juice all the time. And the next thing you know, he's like, people don't want to do it. And he was just making the point that he doesn't, you know, it's not for home use unless you're like making pizzas every goddamn day. That was really the point. But I agree with him.
I agree with the fact that everybody's got too many of these gadgets in their kitchen that they've bought thinking I'm going to use
right.
these, you know, sausage makers,
air fryers.
Yeah, and you chuck them in the cupboard, they dust, and they just give you anxiety because they're taking up space.
Yeah.
But the whole point is, for me, with the brick oven pizza, is that it's outside, it's not taking up any space, it's there where you want it. But what I love is that ritual. So yeah, I'm not going to use it every day. Nobody has the time to use it every day. But when I do, it's a whole sort of, it's the same as a barbecue. You know, it's far easier to cook in on a hot plate, but, you know, people go outside. And
I liked his
point. It's the same thing. It's that whole, you know, getting everything ready and the smell of it, and, you know, it's takes.
You're so sentimental. That's really.
It's true. There's nothing better than going out there, lighting it. You got a beer in your hand. It's nice and quiet. You hear the birds singing, and it's.
I had the chance to use my in-laws have a real pizza oven, like a one that was built, a brick pizza oven. And I tell you what, it was so much fun. We made, you know, those Neapolitan style pizzas. Mm. And it was fun. And I'd never done it before. It took him 2 hours to get the oven to 1,000 degrees. And I didn't know. I was like, oh, what the fuck? I'm going to take you 2 hours to get the pizza. And then you're going to use it for what? How much wood do you have to use to for 15 minutes of cooking? It's just like,
oh, a shitload. But the thing is, you can use it for cook overnight then. So what we tend to do is we stick some sort of dough in there and just put the steel door on it and leave it overnight. And, you know, that slow cooking, you throw tomatoes in some oil, and it'll sort of comfy them overnight because it's so insulated that it'll keep that heat in, like a low, steady heat.
You still haven't made me want to buy one. And the other thing is like, it's just, if I had one, it wouldn't be one of those, like, put on the top of your, like, picnic table ones. I'd want, like, the real ones that are like...
Oh, yeah, you got to get a brick one.
Yeah, but then,
these, like, unis and stuff, they just got a little stone...
Then we put a tarp over it? I mean, it's just like... I mean, you don't have to look at it all the time. I got you. Let's get back into knife talk. What is this, pizza talk?
Okay.
One of the last...
Any more feedback?
One of the last questions, the last feedback was from Legacy Blades NC. And his list of feedback is, there's an awesome tip on mold polishing stones. I picked up a few after hearing you talk about them on the show. They do a fantastic job at cleaning the scale off flats, in particular post-heat treatment. McMaster Car also sells handles that holds the stones for $9 if you're tired of using a tennis ball. Highly recommend. Yeah, mold polishing stones are pretty sweet. I really, really, really like them.
Yeah, our friend Aaron uses them. I think he sort of turned you on to them.
Oh, he browbeat me into getting them. He didn't. Yeah. I mean, there was no, like, suggesting it. He just called me up, and he's just like, I just don't know what your problem is. And he just kind of lit into me. I was like, take it easy. I mean, geez, Louise. It's like, oh, I don't know what you're doing over there. All right, mold polishing stones.
But, you know, if you're not using mold polishing stones, you should be using the best sandpaper. We all know that. That's Rhino-Ed by Indasa. Best stuff in the world. They sell it at TexasFireSupply.com too. You can get 10% off if you put Knife Talk 10 into your little box when you check out. But, you know, Texas Fire Supply sell more than just Rhino Wet. They sell lots of stuff. So take a look. TexasFireSupply.com. Fill up your basket with Rhino Wet. And maybe you don't need more polishing stones. Who knows?
That's it. That's definitely it. And you can get Indas USA over at our friends Maritime.
Yeah, if you're
in Canada.
Canuck.
You got to stop making fun of these Canadians. They're getting more hostile and hostile over time. They're not the friend.
Canadians don't get hostile. Come on.
Dude, I think it's heating up over there a little bit. I think it's heating up. I think the attitudes are changing a little bit. So let's be a little bit more gentle, I think.
Okay.
Love Canada. Love Canada. Love them. So here's what we can do. It's up to you. It's just you and me now, Craig. We got obviously questions. We have some tough scenarios. We have blacksmithing in popular culture. And let me know what you want to do.
Let's do a couple of questions, and then we'll talk about blacksmithing in popular culture.
That's right. Okay, go ahead.
Where are we? Neil Warren. Okay, so picking out an anvil and trying to stay with a smaller company, I ordered an Atlas Knife Maker's anvil. Should I have held out for a more traditional pattern, even though I don't do any other smithing for the most part? Thank you guys for making Mondays rock. Cheers. That's Neil Warren. So he's just bought an Atlas Knife Maker's anvil. What's the difference between that and a normal sort of traditional pattern?
I'm going to look it up right now. Atlas.
I assume it's just a flat, almost like a flat, let's have a look. Atlas Knife Maker's anvil.
Oh. This is fun podcasting right here. We're looking stuff up. We're both just looking stuff up.
Okay, it's just like a normal anvil, which hasn't got any horns, basically.
Right.
So there's a little hardy hole in there, but there's no horn at all.
I think that it's interesting because we get a lot of questions about anvils, and this is the reason why, Craig, you should be picking up every single anvil you can find, because apparently they're throwing them away in France.
They are, really are, yeah.
But there's a lot of knife makers who, traditional blacksmiths, and I know that I believe that USA Knife Maker was selling basically a block of steel with a plate on the bottom that you could bolt to a piece of wood. And I know a lot of knife makers like Will Morrison in Australia just uses like a 4x4 piece of steel. If you're just doing very basic forging, there's no real need for a horn. There's no need for a lot of things. You really want to focus. If you're just wanting to be a bladesmith, you should just get what you can afford. I personally feel like anvils, one of my first anvils was a railroad track anvil, and I hated it. As soon as I got a real one, I was just like, I don't know what I was waiting for. The hardest part is if you're unwilling to just buy one, buy expensive one, or buy, you know, you should be trying to find one, and then you should try to do what you can. It's something that you're going to have for the rest of your life, and they have good resale value as long as you feel like you're getting a good deal. But if the anvil works, if the Atlas works for you, then that's it. And I do believe that anvils are one of those things that, especially if people know that you're a knife maker, they start to things get attracted to you. Or maybe a friend on social media will say, hey, you know, someone near you's got this anvil. Or I know a lot of guys are on Facebook Marketplace and Craigslist all the time, and there are deals to be had. So whatever it takes is my opinion. You know, no, don't be afraid to upgrade and, you know, get rid of it if you don't want it. I haven't got rid of one of them. I have four anvils. I haven't got rid of one of them. I find it almost impossible to think about getting rid of them, to be honest with you.
Yeah. They're certainly not going to lose value, are they, if they're in demand?
Apparently not. I mean, people are lousy with anvils. I mean, what you just want to make sure you're not doing is you're not getting... People are selling stuff at stupid prices. Like, there are a lot of people who are really trying to take advantage of not understanding what you want. It's good that you know that you don't need a horn because maybe you don't want to, you know, use the horn. But I mean, you know,
yeah.
There you go.
Held back a snigger there. Yeah.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place by working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies. We keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
If you and your team want to cut down on busy work and get more choice and control over accounts payable, you need Bill. Bill Accounts Payable is your secret weapon for saving time on AP. And with a special offer at bill.com/podcast, you'll save money too. With Bill, streamline your entire AP process, including bill creation, approvals, and payments. You can pay with ACH, credit card, check, and international wire transfer. Plus, you can easily integrate with most accounting software. No wonder hundreds of thousands of businesses are already using Bill to manage their AP. Schedule a free demo now to see how Bill can automate your financial operations. And right now, get 15% off when you subscribe to Bill Accounts Payable. There's never been a better time to sign up. This special offer is available for a limited time only at bill.com/podcast. Terms apply. See bill.com/podcast for details.
Okay, the next one is, I guess Mareko's going to try one more time. He just updated his Chrome app. We'll see. We'll see.
Okay.
Fingers crossed. here comes from, this one comes from Hitty Wen. Hey guys, I've just watched Craig's video on YouTube on etching a blade with the Brother P700 label printer. I've recently made myself a DIY electro etcher. Shout out to DC Knives. And now I'm thinking of buying a printer to create my own stencils. On some forums and people's and videos, people are making stencils and they are too thin and will burn. Also, the results are not as neat as vinyl stencils. Both seem to be not the case in your video. As your video is from 2017, I would like to know if you would still recommend the Brother P700. Since the comments are turned off in your video, I'm asking you here. Cheers. Hitty from the Netherlands.
You know, this is the video that I was literally getting messages like multiple times a day. And this is 5 years old now. And it was always the same messages. Like, where do you get the tape for this? For this printer. And I think that's the problem. Nobody can get the tape anymore. It was okay. It did the job. You can get really sharp, crisp results. It never seemed to burn with me. And, you know, you literally just print it off and it's ready to go immediately. It was really convenient. The only issue that I did have, excuse me, was the P700, which is the one I was using. I know there's an updated version now. But the one that I was using, the print quality, I think it was 70 dpi. So if you imagine, you know, dpi stands for dots per inch. If you imagine the quality then wasn't as good as, you know, a newer printer, which would give you sort of 300 dpi or above. It squeezes more into that small space. It wasn't the best. I mean, it was far better than, you know what I've seen some other people using. But compared to a laser, it doesn't really compete. But, you know, it did the job really well, and they're relatively cheap. But, yeah, I think the problem is, judging by the comments that I was getting, you can't get the tape any longer anywhere. So, you know, if you come across a big stash of the tape, great. And the tape was STE-002, if I remember correctly, just because so many people asked for it over the years. Yeah, that was the problem, but it was good. I enjoyed it. You could print out, you know, different graphics if you needed, and you know, even on that video, I think I did like this lacing pattern and stuff as well with it. It was good, but the tape is the issue, not really the machine. There we go.
There he is.
Mareko, are you with us? You are. You sound good. You must have found some coins for that phone box.
Well, this is perfect. And then we can, let's ask the next question to you. This one is from Al Woodworks. I see a lot of high carbon steel with Damascus cladding, but I never see Damascus with, say, stainless cladding. Other than looks, is there a reason for not having the cutting edge be Damascus and use a different material for cladding?
It seems a strange thing to do as well. Have this beautiful Damascus, then cover it up and only to have that tiny cutting edge. And you probably wouldn't make out any patterns anyway. It seems a lot of work for...
It's a lot of real estate to cover up, right?
Okay, let's move on with, was it some blacksmithing, what was it, in popular culture?
You know, it's funny because you don't often hear blacksmithing in popular culture.
No.
And it's one of those things that, you know, if I see it, it's usually something that's, I have to do it quick. A lot of times it's like, last week I did the stupid thing with, you know, Conor McGregor's just happened to have the name of his bar was the Black Forge Inn or something like that. It's so stupid.
It's a very tenuous
Very
link.
Tenuous. Yeah. But I know that this is not for you, but I was watching, and I will not do spoilers, but I was watching the Book of Boba Fett and I know you're groaning.
Up, Jeff.
Listen, just let me finish the story. I'm allowed to have a little, some of our listeners like this stuff. So they had this in the newest episode, no spoilers, they had a space blacksmith. And the space blacksmith forged down an object. I'm not giving you any spoilers. They forged out an object into a smaller object. And what I thought was interesting was at first I thought, this is going to be stupid. And then I thought, well, they actually used their heads and they made something big into something small instead of something small into something big. And they actually had a very, very, the first time in any kind of blacksmithing I've seen on TV where there was a volume change that seemed correct. So there you go. That's blacksmithing in popular culture.
There we go. You obviously take your news from different sources to me.
Dude, let's just make it very clear. I am like any type of popular culture. If I look up hammers in the news, it's hammer attacks. I'm on some thin stuff going on in the blacksmithing world. Super duper thin.
Well, I've sent you some headlines that I've noticed over the last week or so. So you've definitely got a different news source to me. So let me read out just these
two headlines. Number two is, I like it when Mareko leaves, you immediately go from pizza, now you're going to read me headlines for the news. That's great. No knife talk anymore. Okay, go ahead.
So this is from the Metro, which is, it's a free paper, but it's quite well respected, actually. So if you're in London, they hand them out on the tube and stuff. So everybody reads them on the way to work, all that kind of thing. This is the headline, okay? Let me clear my throat. This is quite a serious headline here. Woman rode motorcycle naked.
I honestly don't think I can even
You
read
have
this.
To read it now. I don't know what it
woman,
is.
Woman rode motorcycle naked, got fingered in the street, and punched a blind man. That's the headline for the story. So just to repeat, woman rode motorbike naked, got fingered in the street, and punched a blind man. This all happened in one day for this one woman.
Blade Magazine will never, never contact us after this episode. Blade Magazine, I apologize for everything I said. Just keep doing your thing. You don't need us.
So that got my attention, obviously.
Yeah, clearly.
And there's another one here. This is The Guardian, which again, this is probably even more well-respected in the UK. It's, you know, one of the staples. This was in Ireland, so maybe this won't surprise you so much. But anyway, in Ireland, two men take corpse into an Irish post office to claim the dead man's pension.
Jesus, what is going on in the UK? Anytime I do the downward spiral with Nico and I'm looking for crazy stories, it's all from the news sources in the UK. All of it. It's always something weird, like you've said, two weird stories that are probably very commonplace.
This particular one, so it sounds like it's something from a TV show, a comedy TV show. They went in to collect this man's pension because he died, and they were drinking. They were like, "Well, you might as well just at least go and get the money that the government owe him." And they said, "No, you need the guy's identification to claim his pension." So rather than go and get his wallet and bring that back, they brought his corpse, and you know, they put a hat on him. As you know, it was a full-on Uncle Buck moment. You know,
Weekend at Bernie's.
Yes, and they walked him in. You know, and they got suspicious, and they said, "Well, no, we're not giving you the money." So they just dropped the corpse on the floor and ran out.
Oh my god!
So I can only imagine that there was some alcohol or maybe some substances, you know, happening on that day for that to happen. But Jesus Christ. So this may well be a regular part of the show, British Headlines of the Week.
Oh, my God, please. I mean, if you're a Blade show and you're listening to this part, maybe you should reconsider. Jesus.
Back to knives, I suppose. Back to knives. Where were we?
Well, we have questions, and we also have some tough scenarios, and we have some questions.
Let's do a tough scenario just after this.
Okay.
Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com.
And remember, you can go to knifetalk.net/heat and get a discount on that. So Soul Ceramics, who are a supplier of Evenheats, they'll give you $75 off and free shipping in the US. So knifetalk.net/heat to get your Evenheat. And that link will be in the description too. And I've heard that they're getting a big load of stock in as well. So you don't have to wait for them to build it. There's going to be stock actually available. So as soon as that happens, we'll let you know.
I actually had a great conversation with Spence this week. I gave him a call. Actually, you know what? I tell you what. If you have any customer service questions, They are open early, and they are great. I actually had, I was having problems with my tap screen. It was like not, you know, like the tap screen, when you press it, sometimes it goes out of sync, and you have to resync, and I was having a problem, and I called them up, and they helped me kind of talk, they talked me through it, and then I ended up talking to Spence for a while, and they got a lot of great stuff going on, and they are hugely, hugely happy with what's going on. Spence listens to every week. Yeah, I must have talked to him on Monday, and by the time, or Tuesday, and he'd already listened. He heard all about Dr. Laren. He liked the Laren Thomas episode. Yeah, the guys at Even Heat are awesome, and you guys listening to the podcast are doing a great job with them, so...
We've threatened to get Spence on once or twice, but I don't think he's too keen.
We could get him on. I know that he's supposed to go on the Handmade podcast at some point. But Spence, you know, if you want to come on, you know, we'll anything you want, we could do a whole Even Heat episode.
Yeah,
He's great. He and his brother, it's a family. Mike is the dad, and he and his brother are in there, and the whole family's in there. And it's just a nice group of people. Yep. Okay, here's a dilemma from Justin Modica. I got a dilemma. So I'm making a knife for a pretty good friend's uncle. My friend warned me that his uncle had cancer, but liked my work and always wanted a 10-inch Bowie knife. His uncle messaged me and was down to pay for one, giving me $100 down payment. Anyway, my friend called to say his uncle's back in the hospital and doesn't look too good. And he might, you know, things aren't looking good. I just have a sheath left to make for the knife. But if he does croak, that's his, before I finish.
You shouldn't laugh. This is quite a serious.
Do you think I should give him the knife, to my friend as a memory, or should I keep it and try to sell it? Obviously, I know I should ask for more than $100 down from now on. So what would you do in this situation?
I mean, who knows, you know, your relationship with your friend, I don't know. And obviously, the relationship your friend has with his uncle as well. There's a lot of moving factors here. But I think when you originally take on that order, that's got to be in the back of your mind, surely.
Yeah, but you know what? And, it's nice to do nice things for people. Like
it is, yeah.
I tend to not want to nickel and dime everything. Sometimes it's nice to kind of like do things out of the kindness of your heart every so often. Mm. Sometimes that's kind of more important than just every nickel and dime, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and I, you know, this is obviously quite a sensitive situation between, you know, you and your friend and all the rest of it. So, you know, who knows? If you two are close, that would be a lovely thing to do. Yeah, without a doubt. You know, it'd be a memory for him to keep up, you know.
Make him the knife. Just
remind
him
of his uncle.
Just say, you know, I'm sorry that you're going through this. Actually, recently we had a friend of mine. Actually, I'll tell you a story. A childhood friend of mine, who's one of my close friends, childhood friend, has had a child with real health issues, you know, in the last year and a half. Hmm. And this is a person that really meant a lot to me growing up. And they liked the knives and stuff like that. And they were talking about it and they were seeing the things that they wanted. And I was like, you know what? These people have been through enough. So I just made him a knife, and I didn't even tell him. I made him the knife that they liked, and I sent it to him. And they were, I mean, I wrote to them, and they said, we need to pay for this. And I said, look, you know what? You paid enough. Sometimes it is nice to do a nice thing once in a while. I didn't make a big thing about it, but I'm like, you know, I'm not taking your money. And you've been dealing with a lot of the things with your kid. You deserve a little bit of happiness. So I really, you know, sometimes it's nice to just be nice. You know?
Yeah. No, agreed. So, agreed. That would be a very nice thing to do.
Yeah, just give him the goddamn knife, for Christ's sakes. Don't worry about the $100. Okay, this one comes from Nico Kalaudis. I think he's from Greece. About a month ago, a, quote, friend reached through Instagram for a hunting knife, and I told him for a 10-inch knife, this is not the same one as the last one. This is something new. So, okay, this is from Nico. He asked for a hunting knife, and I told him for a 10-inch knife with 1095 in ebony scales and 120 euros with the leather sheath included. Wow. If he wanted stainless, it would be 150 euros because I would pay for the heat treat. I would have to pay for the heat treatment and the travel to get the knife heat treated. A few days later, he calls and he says he wants the leather sheath he wants just the leather sheath for a knife he already owns. But he didn't own it because a friend of mine made it from 80 CRV2 with veg scales, and he sold it a few days ago. I wanted, so the guy wanted to know what the price of the knife was. This is the price of the knife with the sheath. So then he says, I want just the sheath. And he says for his knife, but it turns out he wanted it for a knife he bought from someone
else.
For
another knife.
I decided to tell him to go fuck off. I'm not insulted.
Yeah, that was my response.
I decided to tell him to fuck off. I'm not insulted by him buying somebody from something from someone else, but I think it's very rude to make a sheath to make his sheath when he doesn't say anything.
Yeah. If he's just straight with you and just, oh, sorry, I ended up going to somebody else, but I'd love you to make a sheath. You'd be like, yeah, cool. But yeah, it's just all a bit underhand.
The customer didn't know that they're friends. The knife makers were both friends, so.
Ah.
Mm. Hey, there you go.
Yeah, tell him to fuck off. He did the right thing.
You know, you find that having to navigate through the very antisocial behavior of other people, and it's like it frustrates you because you expect people to treat you the way you would treat them, and when they don't, you get mad, and it's like the worst.
Especially when there's money involved.
But it's when tire kickers are involved. Ugh. And they think, well, I'm never going to see this person again. So, I mean, my dad used to like, he would never tip anybody, and his whole mindset was like, I'll never see these people again. You know, it was just like, yeah, but I mean, you know, that's not really the way you should be. Why don't you just be nice? He used to get mad at me, too. When I was nice to the toll, when I would drive through a toll booth, I always was very nice. Hello, I would smile. I'd say, hello, how you doing? Thanks again. And give him the toll. And my dad would always say to me, why are you so nice to them? And I would say, because this is the shittiest job of all time, being a toll booth taker. Why not be nice? What's wrong with that? So there you go. A little dad story.
We have one every week, I've noticed, Jeff.
Did we have one last week? I don't think so.
I'm sure we would have.
We can. We could. We surely could.
He shaped you more than you know, Jeff. How does that make you feel?
It makes me... you know what? It is... We'll talk about it another time.
Where are
Nair
we?
And M.
Okay.
Nair and M.
Oh, sorry.
Nair and M is in the questions. I'm out of dilemmas.
Okay, where am I then? Yes. Okay. Gentlemen, he clearly doesn't mean us. Several people have said to me that fullers strengthen a blade. Of course, they tell me this without any scientific explanation whatsoever, so I'm hoping if one of you guys could give me an answer and also an explanation to back up your answer. Thank you so much. So, would a fuller strengthen a blade? I would never have thought so, but it's just occurred to me, if you look at like an I-beam...
Yeah.
That gives extra strength because of the shape of that. So, I mean, what are you doing with a knife where you need the extra sort of strength? I don't know. The answer is I don't know.
Well, it's interesting because I was trying to think about it because I don't do fullers. I've heard that, you know, when you're making a full tang knife, a lot of people, like I do, is drill holes in the knife handle to take space, to take a little bit of weight out. And I was told by a few knife makers that what you should do is you should hollow it out, and you know, with like a fullering jig, like you could get at Broadbeck Ironworks sells fullering attachments. And then what happens is you create this like I-beam quality. And what I've been told is it does take out some weight, and it does cause, you know, make it strengthen just like an I-beam. One thing I was thinking about when I was looking at this question is back in the day when we were doing railings, we were doing a lot of outdoor railings, outdoor fencing that go around a swimming pool or going around a pool or something like that. And when we would make the posts, we would never use solid bars. And the reason wasn't just because of the weight and the price, but tubing, like steel tubing, was stronger than stronger structurally than solid bars of the same thickness because they can't bend over their own weight. So like you can bend, I think I'm under the impression that it might be they were saying that the posts were, if they were solid, they are easier to bend on their own weight than tubing. So it does make sense. It definitely does make sense.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. I hadn't given it much thought, but yeah, the first question would be, why would you need to, you know, strengthen your blade in that way? But, yeah, structurally, I suppose it does make sense, yeah. Okay. Michael Ward has said, what equipment would you add to a forge space that already has a forge? 3 small anvils, a 65-pound big blue hammer, a 16-ton coal ironworks press, and a variable speed grinder. There are heating ovens there too. Thank you. Michael's got money to burn at the moment.
I think it says for his college. His college has a pretty nice metalworking area.
It goes on. Yeah. This is the college I graduated from, and it's pretty much open to use for any student after training. It's also used for engineering metallurgy classes to demonstrate different processes or material properties. Okay. So what they got? They've got forges, they've got anvils, they've got a big hammer, they've got a big press, and they've got a grinder and heating ovens. I mean, you've got everything you need there to make knives. You know, drill presses, I suppose. You know, buffers, all that kind of stuff. I'm assuming you've got them there.
Swage blocks. Get yourself a nice swage block. That's important. I think people don't realize how great swage blocks are for. Not for knife making, but for other blacksmithing things. So you definitely get a big old swage block. And get some post vices. Post vices are the best. I would get some post vices and make like a stand so they're like you can use them in the middle of the shop. And then what else would I get? I would get more hammers, more equipment, more tongs. And more, I would probably get more grinder attachments for my grinder.
Where would you get them?
I would go to broadbeckironworks.com and definitely get more of their grinder attachments. And the attachments are great because they're very flexible. And I just built this rack to hold all the grinder attachments I have from them. And they're great. And if you go to broadbeckironworks.com, put in the promo code KNIFETALK, you're going to get the upgrade to the Moreco Deep Platen, which is great. It has a bigger contact wheel on the bottom, which is really pretty amazing. Actually, if you were going to make fullers, it would be perfect for making fullers. Everything they make is really nice, and I think that they have a few surface grinders ready to ship right now. So get a hold of them. Get yourself one of them surface grinders or one of the other attachments at broadbeckironworks.com.
Cool. Back to that stand that you made. When I sent you that message, I was completely over-engineering everything in my head. So I was thinking of a metal plate and, you know, welding some tube in on there. And each leg would go in the tube so I could just pull them out when I need them. And, like, the cost of steel these days, you know, even just, you know, junk steel, do this kind of stuff. It would have cost a fortune and it would have been so heavy. Yours just nailed it really simply. And, yeah. Although I did see somebody else. Oh, fuck it, what's his name? Jay, you know, Fortune Fire Judge.
Jay Nielsen.
Nielsen. He put up a picture today, I think it was on his Facebook, where he drilled holes in his tool arms, and he just had like spikes coming out, and he just hung them up from the hole.
Oh, I see.
Bottom edge of the arm. So they're just up, grab them, stick them in.
You know what, though? Simple. I tell you what. One, I had a nice conversation with Vince not too long ago. I was having problems because one of my tool arms was like wearing away where the tightener is. And he says, just turn it around. So I unbolted everything. I turned it around. I had a nice flat face on the other side. I think that if I like lose it, I might. You know what? God bless Jay Nielsen. Drill some holes in your thing and hang them up. I do like mine because it's out of the way. It's sticking up. And I don't have any wall space anymore. All my hooks are for grinder belts. Like, I don't have any wall space at all.
Yeah.
Zero wall space.
Yeah, fair enough.
There you go.
Okay, but that brings us nicely onto Morning Glory Blades. What are your preferred storage organization methods?
For belts, right?
Or the belts.
For anything.
Okay. He doesn't say anything specific, but, you know, any tips for storage organization? I mean, belts, I just do the same as everybody else. I just stick them on hooks. At one point, I built these, like, drawers and had them all in drawers. But it was just a bore, like, to get them out, because obviously they coil inside each other. And it was, I just do what everybody else ends up doing, stick them on a hook, you know. I don't know how, you know, some people say it's not good for the belts because of the seam taking the weight, but hey, I've never had really an issue.
The real problem that a lot of people have sent us messages about is what do you do about the J-weight belts? because they're so thin. There's probably humidity in the air that's making them curl a little bit, right?
Probably.
That's the one thing.
I mean, I I do the same with them, and then I'm there, you know, trying to unravel them and stick them around my wheels, and it's a pain. But yeah, the only other way I've tried is a drawer, and that just wasn't practical either. So I don't really know. Maybe keep them in the packaging that they're in until you need to use them.
I think
use them to death and throw them out in an ideal world, but nope.
That, you know what? Actually, keeping them in the box is a great idea until you go back and forth into the box. I think that it was Bob Menard was using a MIG spool gun coils. Like, are the when you buy a MIG gun or when you buy a MIG welding wire, when you finish up the wire, it comes in like a cassette
spool,
like a big round cassette. And he was using those, and then you could probably use those to weigh the bottom down. But yeah, somebody got to figure out an easy way to store belts, especially if you buy a pile of them. I'm looking at a mess of them, mess of them.
Yeah. Other storage tips. I keep my glues and stuff like that in a temperature controlled sort of cabinet, which is basically an old fridge. Stick a greenhouse heater in there, one of those little ceramic tubes, and stick that on a thermostat so everything is always at the right temperature. So, you know, in the winter they can often freeze over, in the summer they're too runny. Keep them around about sort of 18, 19 degrees C in that cabinet. Works well. Also good for once you've glued up as well, put them into that cabinet, your knives overnight, and you know that they're the perfect temperature for setting. Storage is just, you know, depends on your space really, isn't it? You know, it depends what you've got.
I have a controversial way of storing things. One is anything you don't need or use, get it out of your shop. I really tried to make the shop as bare bones for knife making as possible. This is not a place to store snowblowers. This is not a place to store tools that you don't need. I have one drawer with electrical stuff if I have to make changes of like plugs or stuff like that. But like, I try to keep the junk drawers down. I try to make sure that the tools I need are in the stations that I need. Like all my files are where by the vices where I would do the file work. I'd really try to minimize this shit in my shop, and I listened to my sister used to say to me, don't shit it up with crap. So I go out of my way to make sure that if I'm not using this tool, it's away and I'm never going to need it, or it's somewhere that's out of my way, because clutter is the problem, and the less you need, the better. Actually, I was looking at old pictures of my old shop, which was the shed, and it was tight. It was like 8 feet by 12 feet. And I had everything in there. Every spot was, it was exact the amount of space I had. My chop saws were on the doors. So when the doors would open, there'd be a chop saw on the door. I had a table saw mounted to the door. So the door would open and the table saw would go out. Everything, I had no room for bullshit. So I found that when you just don't need a lot of stuff that you don't need, just get rid of it. And or put it somewhere where you don't need it. Just get it out of your way, and then there won't be clutter.
Yeah, yeah. I've just ordered one of those, you know, those like engineer's cabinets on casters.
Yes.
You know, with the really short drawers. I've ordered one of them with the hope that I only put in there the stuff that I'll need day to day. And it's because it's on wheels, it can sort of come around with me different areas of the shop. Because what I had previously was just, you know, a big tool wall and everything was up on the wall and nothing would ever go back and you'd lose it. And then quickly everything just sort of mounts up. So I'm hoping this will help with that. I always struggle with keeping things where they should be, and yeah, I'm not a tidy person basically. It's trying to come up with little hacks like that, I suppose, that would force you to be, you know.
My favorite hack, I think probably my best hack of all time, is how I clean up my clamps. Did you see that little dopey video I did of my clamps
with your drill thing?
People loved it.
Yeah.
People were crazy about it. So you have those little clamp, those tiny little C clamps that you use for gluing stuff up, and you always get shit in there. You always get get the glue in there or whatever.
Oh yeah.
So what I did was I got I think it was like a 7/16, sorry guys, like a socket, but a socket that goes in your drill gun, right? And then I cut out a channel in the socket so it would be able to fit around the the twisting part of the vise. And then I was able to run the drill to open and close the vise to get open and close the clamp so it would cut out, it would knock out all the gunk. And people
the threads, clean the threads.
It cleans the threads up, and it works great, and you don't have to fight the clamps. And then it was just like it's turned into like it's probably the best tip I've ever had. And they'd probably be the only last. And then, you know, I could do a million things, but the how to clean the crap out of your clamp is going to be what I'm going to go down with. And then I can't do better than that, so I'm done with no more tips from me. That's it. That's my only tip from now on.
Yeah, that's it. I think. Tip points, we're done.
I'm done. I can't do any better than that.
Benjamin Mullins, you want to read
that? Go ahead. Oh, okay, yes. Benjamin Mullins says, I'm a fairly new listener to you for the podcast. I'm loving the podcast. I'm very new to knife making, and I'm wanting to make a kitchen knife for my friend. He's wanting a kitchen knife that'll survive the outdoors and keep an edge well. What style of kitchen knife would you recommend, and what kind of steel would you recommend? I've been eyeballing some stainless steels.
A kitchen knife that'll survive the outdoors. So I suppose you want like a camp knife, I suppose.
Stainless steel is the move. If you don't want to have to worry about the rust.
Yeah, yeah. And if you want to be extra special, you know, because this is a friend of yours, you could get some Dharma steel and really take it up a level. And we can get you a discount, obviously. If you go to dharmasteel.se and you put Knife Talk in, once you've set up your account, you'll get 10% off your order. And it obviously is the best stuff. But what style? Okay, so it's a kitchen knife to be used possibly outdoors as well. So I'd say you want, like a sort of camp knife and maybe keep it thin. And when you tell your friend not to go, battening through wood and all that kind of stuff with it. You know, if this is for cooking, it needs to be used specifically for cooking. That's what
I'd say. Outdoor camp knives, I think that in the mindset of people who think they want something for, cutting their sausage and then, battening. I mean, this guy says this is new to the podcast and you're trying to get him into some Dharmasteel, which is number one. As a high-level move of yours, you're selling ice to Eskimos here, Craig. I mean, that's unbelievable. I mean, it depends. I think people have this idea I made a camping cooking knife for my old friend Carl Ruiz. He wanted something. His quote was, I want something for backyard barbecue and home defense. Yeah. So it was no knuckle guard, something with a little clearance, something short. You don't need a 10-inch chef knife if you're bringing on a camping trip. You know, some make a short bushcraft knife that doesn't have a bush. You know, bushcraft knives are probably the one to do because they're not really known for having known for having big knuckle guards. I think that's your move if you want a kitchen knife outdoors. You just don't want that knuckle guard interfering with the heel of your blade, right?
But again, you don't want it to be too thick, because a lot of people immediately think an outdoor knife is going to be thick and they're going to be using it, throwing it at trees and all sorts of shit.
I tell you what would be perfect, which is our old guest Quentin Middleton's new folding chef knife. I got it. It's the what is the name of it again? It's the
Eno or something like that, I think, isn't it? It's three letters. Oh, no.
Yeah,
oh, no.
It's great. I mean, it's perfect. It's perfect for camping. I mean, that is that folding chef knife that Quentin Middleton made is perfect for camping because it's burly enough that you could definitely use it for, like, cleaning fish and stuff like that. I mean, I wouldn't batten. Who's battening trees anyway for a campfire? And then you're going to cook a five-star meal. Come on, man. Give me a break. I don't want people to do that. They love to do that. I want to make a rat tattoo, but I also want to like cut some trees down. I mean, what are you doing? Come on, man. I would get one of those.
Get an axe.
Yeah.
So. Okay. Eben Blade Customs. Let's take two more. We'll call it a day. What's the difference between an S grind and a Granton edge? Is there even a difference, or is it just different names for the same thing? I think so. So, from what I gather anyway, an S grind runs right down, sort of the blade, whereas a Granton edge has almost these like grooves, So it's like parts of an S grind, then there's a gap part of an S grind.
Yeah, like scallop. There are scallops in the middle.
Scallop, exactly. Yes, that's what I was trying to say. Yeah, yeah. Whereas an S grind, you generally don't do that. It's just one big grind.
Right.
That's my feeling about it. Is it a difference or is it just different names for the same? Yeah, so there is a difference, basically, yeah. So, yeah, again, if you imagine you're looking at the sort of the cheek of the blade, an S grind will take out like a scallop, one big scallop along the whole length. Yeah, like a fuller, basically, yeah. Whereas a Grant and Edge will be strips of that.
Yeah. People love food release for some reason. I mean, it's like... It's I see the Grand Edges in like when I see anytime I see what's his face, Gordon Ramsay, he always got a knife with a Grand Edge on it. Like he's like I don't know what I would think that they're probably pretty hell. What the idea of both of them is you're creating you're taking away the idea of suction, so you suction, can't yeah. Like when you're cutting potatoes, potato is the warrior, the enemy of flat blades because it, I guess it's got yeah. some gluck on the, I don't know what you call it, you don't call it potato it's juice,
starch, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, starch. Yeah. You don't call it potato juice or potato gluck. You call the starch
just
the
juice some potatoes. Ugh.
And then when you're cutting it, that sloppy suction against the side of your blade makes it stick, and then some people apparently get annoyed by it and they use their finger and they take it off. But if you have a Grand Edge, which is those, you know, one after the other, every you know, so often there's like a little cut inside the knife, you're preventing that gluck or that potato juice from creating that suction cup action. Same thing with an S grind. In regards to the difference, it's, I think that, I don't know who, I tell you who does a Grant Edge, of custom knife makers who does a Grant Edge, probably one of the best Grant Edges around is our friend Fingal Ferguson.
Yeah.
He does Grant Edges with Damasteel, and it looks so tight because the cutout, and I would imagine that more, you want to talk about, so now all of a sudden you want to talk about back to, we had a guy who asked a question about no one puts stainless steel on Damascus. If you did stainless steel with Damascus core, and then you put a Grant and Edge on there,
and then did a Grant and Edge, wow, yeah,
you're a bad motherfucker, and you have to pay a royalty to Fingal Ferguson because that's what he does. He'll do that Grant and Edge, and then it'll be these like little lobes of beauty inside. But you want to talk about some hot shit stuff. Do a Grant and Edge with some San Mai or something like that. Figure it out, and then cut us a check. Cut us a check for that idea, ladies and germs. Grand Edge.
You pick one more, then Jeff, and we'll call it a day.
Okay, let's see.
By the way, all these questions have come via Instagram, so you can follow us at Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. If you have a question, send them through, and. Jeff does all the hard work, so Jeff compiles these, and we've got so many. So thank you all so much for
And we need some new ones, ladies and germs. This isn't, you know, come on, we got to help some out. Minuteman EDC writes, "Hey guys, I have a hammer question. I have a rounding hammer, a cross peen, and a straight peen. I've been looking at a dog's head hammer. Is it worth it? What are the pros and cons? Love the show." I just did a whole episode of the Full Blast podcast with my main man, John Ariani. We talked about pros and cons, overrated, underrated of hammers. And we did talk about a Japanese hammer. Do you know about those Japanese style hammers, Craig?
Only from your podcast. I don't have one. I've never used one. But yeah, I only know one from that.
They're interesting because they're, if you don't forge, they're, you think you know how they are until you actually using them. So because a Japanese dog's head hammer, the eye of the hammer is not in the middle of the hammer, but it's on one side, and all the weight of that material is out, almost like if you had an axe, but instead of it being tapered like to a point, it's like out flat and like big. And the idea is it's not for forging, but it's for planishing your bevels of whatever you're doing. So like Japanese dog head hammers are great for that planishing. Cause it falls flat and it's easier to kind of flatten out that, you know, flatten out in the indentations. There's a lot of people use them. Is it overrated, underrated? I think, I think we said that it was perfectly rated. I think I said it was overrated, but I just don't use it. I get the same results from any square faced. I like a square faced hammer. I don't. But at the same time, I'm sure that if I had the right one, and I gave it a whirl, I'd probably say this is the best thing ever. So I think what we ended up saying was, if you needed to round up your, you know, you wanted to just get a couple more to round out your hammer rack, why don't you get one? And I would get one from John Ariani's Sunset Forge. So that's the end of that.
There we go. And remember, Knife Talk 10 to get 10%.
That's right.
Off.
Make sure you has to be on the newsletter. So get on the... There you go.
And with that, I think we're done. It's a shame Morocco couldn't stick with us.
He did. I have after-show stuff from him to...
Cool. Okay. Yeah. But he is on the road, so he will be back with us next week, and we'll hear all about his travels too. So that'll be cool. Thank you all for listening. Bye for now.
This show.
There we go. Okay. Okay. So Mareko speaking to us from by proxy.
Yeah. Well, he, so we, you know, in the beginning of the show, we were doing the Wordle for your child's name.
Ah, yes.
And he
yes.
sent some names. He sent some names.
Okay, let's have a look.
So I'm gonna read some, and then you tell me if there are any. Well, there's
okay. Well, we've got a shared document open here. Okay, this won't work so well for the podcast, but we'll describe what we're doing. I've got a shared document, and if you have a look, I've got five dashes.
Well, I have to read his first.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Horace, H-O-R-U-S. I think he thinks you're Egyptian or something like that.
H-O-R-U-S.
H-O-R-U-S. Yeah, yeah. Aren't you from Alexandria? You're not.
Horace.
Well, then he has Boris.
It's not that, but there is a U.
Oh, there is a U.
Yes.
Well, there's Boris. He suggests Boris.
Okay. No. There's no extra letter.
Oh, well,
there.
There is a U.
And you had two attempts.
That's, these are his guesses. What about...
But you're hearing the results.
Oh. So, so I don't get it. All right. So there's a U. There's a U.
There's a U in there somewhere.
But there was no B. There was no D. There was no A. There was no T.
No.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I don't know, man. I'm not even looking. I can't even look. It's not very good audio for me trying to think. I mean, thinking is terrible audio.
Send your suggestions through to Knife Talk Podcast.
I'll just read off
Instagram.
I'll read off his. He had Joshy, Ripley, Billy, and then he had Killer, K-H-I-L-R.
Who calls that kid Killer?
Finally says, admittedly, some of these are very bad names.
Yes.
But they use up letters.
Yes.
So he tried.
This name, so when, before we had the twins, we didn't know if they were going to be, you know, boys, girls, or whatever at the time. And I was pushing.
I have
name,
the name, I think. Like, okay. No, I don't. It's four letters.
Okay. And Amy was like, you can't have that name. It's ridiculous. I'm like, oh. But over time, she softened to the name. And now, once we knew it was a boy, she was like, okay, then you get to decide.
So it's not Hugo.
It's not Hugo.
Fuck.
Jesus, no.
Oh, that
Jesus,
was,
no.
That's not a bad name.
Sorry if there's any Hugos listening, but it's not Hugo,
oh, fuck.
No.
Fuck, and we're going to get the DMs from the angry Hugos. What's wrong with my name?
But yeah, it's any time now. Any time now, which is quite stressful, because I'm sitting here in our kitchen, which, to be honest, is nearly finished. Our kitchen I'm sitting in now is nearly finished, but I can see our front door, and I can see an 8-inch hole at the bottom of the door, which is why it's so cold in here. And there's just so many jobs to finish here. It's just like, ugh. But we'll get there. We'll get there.
Well, how's the weather? Any good?
It's cold, but it's been really, like, blue skies, bright, like, beautiful, beautiful weather, to be honest with you. And there's signs spring are coming. The chickens are laying eggs. And there's, yes. It's still, like, in the daytime, it's maybe 8 or 9, maybe 10 degrees C. But the evenings are still freezing, you know, around about zero. -1. But yeah, the daytime's now, because I think because the sun is out so much at the moment. We're getting eggs from the chickens, and we're starting to see some stuff sprouting from the, you know, from the ground. So yeah, we're quite lucky. We have intense winters here, because we're right in the middle of France, and we're you know, it's not very mountainous here, I suppose, but we do get quite intense winters, but they're over pretty quickly. So normally by February, we're starting to wear T-shirts again, you know, so... Yeah, so hopefully in the next few weeks we'll see big, big changes quickly.
Jeez, we're about to have what's called a Arctic bomb or some sort of blasting snowstorm. Geez. I had to run out to get groceries at lunchtime because we're expecting 48 inches.
Toilet paper and pasta in all the shops.
What, pardon me?
Running out of toilet paper and pasta
in
all the shops.
Dude, I got a hot tip for you. Because when it's like a snow day, the girls like pasta. We might have found the most perfect pasta of all time. You'll never guess what it is.
What do you mean, like shape. Brand or shape? Oh,
this is a game-changing shaped pasta.
Game-changing.
It's called radiatori. It's like a radiator.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
So radiatori.
Is it tubular as well? So It's got
fins coming off it. It looks like a radiator. It really does look like a radiator, but it's like a small like a shell, but it has these like little fins all over it. So like it traps sauce perfect. I mean this thing might be. I mean you fuck around with the bullshit penne. Penne is the worst. P.S. Penne you can just cut penne out. Penne, I'm never buying penne. I hate penne.
Really?
I don't like to. How do you pick it up with a fork? Will you go through the tube with the fork? It's bullshit. Penne sucks. Get yourself some radiatori. I'm begging you. It's the best sauce attaching pasta of all time. So nice. I got some radiatori. Got a few extra things. And then we're going to deal with some snowstorm. So.
Yeah. Hunker down.
I think I figured out the name of your child, by the way. It's a five-letter word, and there's a U in there.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Jesus.
No, am I wrong? Or what is it in French? Jesus. Jesus.
Jesus. Yeah, that would make me God. The son of God was Jesus, wasn't he? Was he? No.
Good job. We're not just get bad emails from Hugo. All the Hugos in the world. You're a Huguenot.
I didn't pay much attention to religious studies.
Jeez, what a podcast. Yeah, Blade Magazine. I'm sorry. I don't know why I even mentioned your name. I'm sorry. I apologize. I take it all back. Everybody listen to the Mark of the Maker. We're not cutting it this time. This is like some bullshit.
Let's not go down this route, okay? I was going to say, who exactly is his dad then?
You know, they don't like it when we talk politics. They don't like it when we talk about the panty. You think they like to talk about the religion?
Probably not.
There's nothing more awful than the fact that I heard my fucking Peloton instructor referring to the pandemic as the panty, and now I can't call it the panty. I'm so out of touch. It's crazy. My Peloton instructor called it the panty. And I'm like, from now on, it's the fucking panty. That's it.
Well, you know, you've said the panty a few times in this episode. And each time you did, I'm thinking, what the fuck is he on about? And I'm thinking, I must be out of touch.
Yeah, you're out of touch.
I don't know what he's on about.
You're out of touch. The fucking panty. That makes it, that totally makes it so much funnier.
Yeah. And it was your Peloton instructor.
Totally
as well,
out of touch. Kendall Tool, happy birthday. It's her fucking birthday.
On that note,
Jesus,
let's call it a day.
Christ. That's his
name.
Thank
you all for listening.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Get everything for your next project today at Menards and save big money. Right now, all stock outlets with USB ports are on sale. Ditch the need for bulky USB adapters. Upgrade your home with features like ultra-fast charging, allowing you to charge your smart devices up to 40% faster than standard USB outlets. Also, view our weekly flyer on Menards.com and check out all the great deals happening this week.
Save big money.